You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stukats Podcast.
It is nearing the time to update our wildly popular March Sadness tournament. This has gotten over like gangbusters. Everyone loves this, April Fools. March Sadness is presented by Get Your Guide. Discover over 100,000 unforgettable travel experiences in the U.S. and around the world at getyourguide.com. It's our very easy to follow March Sadness tournament. It is a multimedia affair. There's brackets of songs and still images and Greg Cody rants saying nice hat, asshole to Jonathan Zaslow. So very easy to follow format. If you just pay attention, folks. Folks, this is very clearly your fault as to why this is not universally beloved. It is not ours. We did right. Chris, what do we have so far for the tournament? I mean, the real tournament is in the Final Four, so we've got some elite matchups to cover here.
We will be getting towards the Final Four by the end of this week. Today we are doing our second round matchups in the Song region. One seed, Puka Nacua, which is of course this monster.
His name is Cooper. Running curls, but when his hammy got a tear, he saw Puka standing there, his blade diminished. Hustle take over. Nacua hopped into the car. McVay has maybe found a star, and then that Stafford threw him 25-2. Oh, there's a brand new kid in town out of BYU. They call him Puka.
So that's that one. That's the one seed. That's just going to be tough to beat.
It's a real earworm, honestly. It's one of the better songs that we've ever done because it's just so darn catchy. I'm really happy that's still alive, you're telling me?
That's alive, and that is facing our 9 seed by Jeremy Taché, Bills, Bills, Bills.
At first we started out real cool. Starting the season with a 9-3 record. You're getting comfortable, ain't doing things like running the ball, changing up Mike McDaniel. The offense started struggling. Tyreek is faster than a car, but it don't matter if you can't get him the ball and have the running game to ever have consistency. Hold on to that Titans lead, and now you're losing week to week. Struggling, interception, oh my brother. Quarterback, why haven't I found another? A baller, when times get hard, I need someone to scramble around instead of a pocket pass to get shoved to the ground.
Can you beat the Bills? Can you beat the Buffalo Bills?
Exceptional work, Jeremy.
It is. Really
you're going up against UConn.
No, it's it.
I have a slight criticism of the Puka Nacua song, which, by the way,
please criticize it.
I had me and my ski friends. That's the whitest thing I've ever said. Singing all week while we were on vacation. But Puka Nacua. But the opening to the song, the first few words of the song, his name is Cooper.
Yeah.
His name is Cooper.
Good at running curls. Yeah, and he mentions Tua. Look, it's a little all over, but it's all about the hook. By the way, if you and your ski friends ever get together, I do know a wallet that you can buy off of Instagram. We got the Wrong Song coming up next, Chris Cody.
4 seed Wrong Song.
You are so wrong.
That note. Yeah. Let it play. What are you doing? Let it play.
You got wrong, so let it go. You're wrong, 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 wrong.
One thing that we didn't mention is we talk about the baby part, but that go
he holds
is
it
crazy.
For so long. I've got him in his home office, like just all by himself.
Oh, from a singing perspective, it has the advantage over the next song, but the next song is a total banger.
First person shooter?
And
it is going up against 5 seed Sports Whisper.
Bill, it's Tom. Listen up. Listen, Belichick, let me whisper in your ear. Tell you something that you might like to hear. You had a nice career, but the end looking sad. Mind if I tell you about this plan I had? My home's been gaining on me way too fast. Surely as a coach that you should get past. I can play at least another year or two. So here's what we're gonna do. I'm calling up Woody and we're going to the Jets. Twice a year we can beat the Patriots. We're kicking both Salah and Aaron to the curb. I'm calling up Gronk and we're flipping up the bird. Never really wanted Greg Olsen's spot. Wanted him to know how much cash I got. You needed me, Bill. I'll always be the boss. After we're done, you can coach lacrosse.
You
better listen.
I like this one. You know why? Because that's us at our roots. Mm-hmm. Listener-driven content. We got a lot of ringers there. You got Greg Cody. You got Jeremy. These are people on the show. Yeti and Streeter, God bless them. They're pros at this. To have listener-driven, user-created content in this tournament, that's an homage to the roots of this show. I'm going to root for the Sports Whisperer there. But Yeti, a very talented vocalist, as you can see from this number two overall seed.
This next matchup is my favorite of this bracket because it involves, I'm going to play it first, our two seed, We're All Gonna Die, but I enjoy who this is going up against. But first, two seed, We're All Gonna Die.
Die. We're all gonna die. We're all gonna die. We're all gonna die. The sky seems to be falling.
This one's a classic.
Yeah, but in terms of a vocal gulf in vocal skill, they don't get much wider than Yeti versus Taylor.
It's a three. The crowd goes into a delusion. Winning in the playoffs, not an illusion. It's a heat check. He's on fire. But let it fly. Saw the contract. They said he was overpaid, man. Said that he was overrated and that we had no plan. They were wrong and I am beaming. Hear the Mecca say, carry us, Jalen Brunson. Comes up clutch, that's why we won. New York knows you are the...
We just showed Taylor on the screen. I'm glad he's okay. It's been a rough couple of days for Taylor. Not just UNC.
The confidence between Yeti and Taylor.
That song is going to advance to the next round.
Taylor had like a 60-point effort recently, right? He did like on 50 shots.
44 shots.
Yeah, but
that song is almost as good as Hotline to the End Zone.
And he also got knocked out on a buzzer beater last night by Shane Gillis-Alexander. Just a terrible, terrible
He scored 60 points and lost.
I mean, what can't he do at this point? The next song I really like, a three seed, Dan the Ramblin' Man.
Long Dan was born a rambling man, talking to guests and doing the best he can. But when it's time for greed and no one understands, why like Dan the Ramblin' Man?
Jeremy, this is a great song, not just because it's catchy, not just because you knock it out of the park, but also it's a device that we can use forevermore. It's a part of show lore now, so a classic by any stretch of the imagination. The next song needs a little bit more explanation. The next song is when Chris Cody thought Franco Harris, famous Pittsburgh sports icon, Italian, was actually Irish.
Real
and he
fans
thought
don't need an explanation.
It wasn't Franco. He thought it was Frank, space, O, apostrophe, Harris.
Franco Harris, Franco Harris, pride and joy of the Emerald Isle. Franco Harris, Franco Harris, give him half a yard, he'll take a mile. And if Terry Bradshaw knows what's up, he'll audible once again. Cause you hand it off to O. Harris, and he scores it every time.
I was thinking about this the other day. I did a whole episode of Around the Horn as Conor McGregor with an Irish accent. I don't think I could do that again in 2024. Like, I don't think I could get away with that. People would yell at me.
Is that your most controversial?
Gotta be sad if that was
Halloween costume.
No, not controversy.
No, I mean, probably Cardi B, because the second, you know, men saw me in that, they were like, that's not it. And I was like, eh, that's exactly the response I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys were glued to your TVs this weekend. Sounds like we all were. And I know it was opening weekend and March Madness was crescendoing, but I was locked into the UFL, as you can imagine. And I want to give you guys, Jeremy, it looks like you missed it.
I was moving.
He groaned loudly. I don't know what that was about.
It wasn't me. No, it came from a different direction.
So I have some problems with the UFL. Number one, that it's the UFL and not the XFL. I hate that we decided to keep the
UFL.
That
is a bad idea. Different vibes.
It was a merger,
different,
right?
So the XFL and the USFL merged, and they decided to take the moniker the UFL, which was also a fairly recent failed spring football league. It's pretty damning, and Daryl Johnson, I think, has some of the blame here because they decided Moose, because the XFL it was actually a good couple of days for the XFL before the games got going, because the NFL voted on adopting the XFL kickoff. You know who's not using the XFL kickoff?
The UFL.
The UFL. That is just bewildering to me that anybody that's seen that kickoff, including the NFL, which is pretty married to its tradition, decided, oh, this is exciting. This is a great, great innovation in the sport. And for the UFL just to decide that it didn't want to do that when the NFL basically kingmaked it. So it was a huge bummer. And also, as a passionate XFL fan, to be totally dominated by the USFL in these matchups. We had the matchups of the Stallions versus the Renegades and the two recent champions. The XFL, or what's left of the XFL, took a big fat L over the weekend. And I got to tell you, last year, there was so much conversation. You couldn't get a sip of water over here, over this communal watering hole.
Was the group chat buzzing? Was your group chat buzzing?
People left in the dead of night. We had two people leave. I'm telling you, the XFL captured.
Does that become your saddest chat?
No! There was a 64-yard game winner in the UFL, and no one's talking about it.
Field goal? Stuck out here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using Simply Safe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor. Before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with Simply Safe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. Plus, add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. No contracts to worry about, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Don Levitard.
And then Matt Stafford threw him 25-2. Oh, there's a brand new kid in town out of BYU.
Stugatz.
They call him Puka. Puka Nacua. His quarterback is not named Tua.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
I'm starting to get back into pro basketball, too. It's getting to be that time. Jimmy Butler told me it is that time, and then he decided to take in the Miami Open and publicly flirt with Camila Cabello.
Yeah, I've heard your take on the NBA.
It's not great. It's not great, but now is the time where you jump back in. Penicillin for the Miami Heat arrived in the shape of the Portland Trail Blazers. God, does Terry Rozier hate the Portland Trail Blazers. 60-point victory, the ninth largest margin of victory. This is how bad Portland was. They made Miami look like they had a great offense.
Miami had their highest scoring game of the year, tied with one game. I forget which one it was earlier.
Franchise record for assists.
Franchise record for assists. They also, what's really crazy is it's the ninth largest margin of victory in NBA history. And the Blazers this year have a worse loss. They're the first team ever to lose multiple games by 60 points in a season.
I don't want to revel in the failings of that front office, but I'm really enjoying this one.
It's fun.
I'm really enjoying this one. We all know what happened there and what the media especially tried to make happen there. And okay, congratulations. You ruined what was a pretty cool sports market.
When Cronin right now is looking in his mirror this morning, is he admitting that he screwed it up, or is he coming up with excuses on why it didn't pan out?
Like, their argument's going to be the whole way through that
they got the assets to where they'll be able to choose the young players want in those picks. But when you look at some of the players that they probably would have gotten in a move, I mean, we've been through this multiple times during the regular season, but it's pretty amazing to see how bad it's going in Portland.
And the picks, to be fair, because I am going to sideswipe Cronin one more time. To be fair, the picks were a part of this conversation, but people were saying, look at the players that they got, Time Lord and Ayton, and look, they'd allow them to build on the fly but and then develop these younger players that they have on their roster, and look at these picks. People have already pivoted just to picks. That's a losing hand, my friend.
And it started off with, hey, we have the number two pick in this draft. We're going to have a superstar. Scoot Henderson does not appear to be a superstar. So all of those things seem to be a bad combination for Cronin. And it is possibly, that's the worst possible scenario for him, because the one guy who dug in his feet and said, I'm not going to give in to my superstar, and this happens. And like, I literally had, I'm not going to say who, but someone on TV that I share a screen with laugh when I mentioned that it's going to come back to bite them because they didn't do right by Damian Lillard. And whether you want to call this karma, whatever, it's all nonsense. But I do think that they were making poor decisions. They made a poor decision with Dame. And it just goes to show you, hey, maybe that's just a pattern here. Maybe they're not making all the best decisions over in Portland.
It might be one of those situations, though, for Miami and Portland where there are no winners here. Maybe Damian Lillard ends up being the winner. I just saw that they finally broke their winless streak without him over there. Milwaukee over the last month has settled in, looking like they can maybe be a threat again in that conference. But I don't necessarily think that there are winners here. One interesting storyline that has just popped up on the news feed is Shams has mentioned that Joel Embiid, who's been out, and as he's been out, the Sixers are now hovering around that 8 seed, looking play-in worthy. He's going to be coming back, it appears, this week in time for that matchup with the Miami Heat, Jeremy.
Yeah, he plays the Oklahoma City Thunder on Tuesday. That's where they're projecting that Embiid could come back. If not, it would be Thursday against the Miami Heat down here in Miami, and that's a huge matchup. The Heat currently are a game and a half ahead of Philly for the 7-8 matchup, so obviously you want home court in that first play-in because the winner gets to play Damian Lillard and the Milwaukee Bucks, which is obviously not an easy matchup, but at the moment, you'd rather play the Bucks than the Celtics.
Yeah, Izzy, I want to ask you what you make of the Eastern Conference right now, in that you have Boston, who essentially has nothing to play for at the moment, except for trying to try out Porzingis on switches on the perimeter. And there's a chance that in the first round, they're going to get a test. And I don't think you can eliminate Atlanta, given what we've seen recently out of the matchup problems that they present for Boston. In the first round, they may get tested right away with either Philadelphia, Atlanta, Miami. I guess you can throw Indiana if they get some losses this weekend in that mix. That's not going to be easy.
No. And I know we all try to talk about this here, and you got the flames on the side of your face. We talk about it in the context of the Heat. But the first thing I thought of is Joel Embiid as an 8 seed for the Boston Celtics. Like, they've got to be thinking to themselves, we are just probably going to complete this great regular season, and you've got to be kidding me. I might have to face Embiid, Giannis, and then maybe Jimmy Butler in that mix somewhere, and it's going to be miserable for them. They're going to be tested with that same sort of, you know, hey, you guys chokers from the very first round if they face Joel Embiid, who's had, you know, a couple of weeks under his belt.
Is it worth it for the 76ers for Embiid to come back? And I know the speaking as a Heat side of things, right? Like,
we don't want him back.
Number one, you don't want to have to face Joel Embiid. But more, speaking as someone who just saw an 8 seed make a run, it would be foolish to say that the 76ers have no chance.
Right,
but
so
is it worth it for them
to
bring him back and try to make this run?
I think so, and I'll tell you why. First of all, they've had so many years where they've had opportunities, and whether he's broken down at the key time. Now you're getting him back, and you would assume, hey, he's not going to break down again. But I think part of the reason is it's like he was having an historical offensive season. No, go, Chris.
I just need to jump in here.
I cannot believe what Tony told me.
Of course you bring Embiid back. Look what happened last year with the Heat. The 8 seed can absolutely make a run in this playoffs, no matter what.
I thought Jeremy sounded like an idiot there.
Last year,
he held that opinion.
Last year, Tony said the Heat should tank for some pick for Wembanyama, the 1%
exactly
chance they had at getting Wembanyama. And now he's sitting here.
Hey, Wembanyama looks pretty good.
32.
They weren't going to get him.
Oh, whatever.
Are you prepared to take that?
I just can't believe Jeremy's arguing for Joel Embiid to not return.
I want to make it abundantly clear. I don't hold that opinion, and was positioning that question just to see
the conviction sounded pretty
Is your
strong.
Best player, yeah, do you not want him on
the best
the team
version
anymore?
Of Joel Embiid?
Do you want your best player
is
to join?
Is he rushing back, what Jeremy's asking.
My question would be, if you're a team that already probably didn't have a chance of making a deep run, even when Embiid was healthy, then you're looking at bringing him back now.
I mean,
they already made the decision on when he's coming back based on how what the treatment plan was, what surgery they decided on, whatever. So the fact that he's able to come back now is not a the decision. The decision was made before.
Right, exactly.
Were you doing an April Fool's thing? Yeah. I don't.
What was that?
And like, when you want, like, you're gonna come in as a 7 or 8 seed, potentially maybe a 6 seed, and you're going to have no pressure in the world, and you're going to have the best player in the conference who was having an historical offensive year with no pressure on himself, just going to be like, hey, I'm just going to go for 70 every game. Yeah. I have no idea how that's going to end, but I would be nervous as hell facing that.
I don't disagree with that at all, and the space that I was operating from when it comes to the Sixers is just they're going to have so much cap room this offseason. It's like more important, obviously. They theoretically could make a run this year, but as
are you
a team
for next
already
season?
Struggling,
got him
are
on,
you
like,
already
he
playing
might
for next season?
Lose his leg
this
if he plays.
I'm just no risk. Joel Embiid constantly gets hurt.
A landmine.
That's all I'm saying
fair,
is having him healthy to start next season when you're building a roster for next year to compete.
You weren't
for
telling
a
me what to think. You were just asking me if I'd like.
That's
to.
Exactly it. That's right. All I'm trying to
even
do. And now I'm mad. Now I'm mad. Now I want to approach it from the other side.
But this is an off-injured player. And this is the prime of his
career.
That's
all I'm saying.
You don't just willingly punt on a year of that window because you don't know how long that body will hold
up.
That's
the flip side of the argument. The argument that I was trying to make on his behalf of playing next season
is the argument that
you don't
punt.
You don't punt on what next season could be by potentially rushing him back through that treatment plan to get here to try to make a run as a lower seed.
Well,
that's all.
Even if they're in the playoffs,
more like a Heat fan.
Even if they're in the playoffs,
you're exactly
still
right.
Want
I just don't
want to
play
sit.
It. Okay. Yeah, okay. You know what I'm doing.
Well, it took a while, but the Eastern Conference is finally starting to get some storylines just because we're approaching this end game, Spence. Of look, Miami's always just going to approach the regular seasons this way. It's a little infuriating. I don't see it with them this year the way that I've seen it in years prior. They're not really – they're hanging with these bottom feeder teams in ways that you would really like for them to assert themselves. At times, that Wizards game last night was a little dicey. I'm just not liking what I'm seeing from them. But at the same time, there's very little cohesion. I don't really know what they're capable of. I know that they'll drag a game into a mud. Their offense is limited, but – if I, as a Heat fan, am just going to have to talk myself into Jimmy Butler's going to turn into Michael Jordan again in the postseason, and that's what it's going to take, fine. That's an identity too,
what
I guess.
What if you went the opposite route? What if you went, hey, let's just – because when they have their best, most success is when the players are allowed to be who they are. Like Terry Rozier, go out and score. Go do your thing.
He can be who he wants to be.
If he hits two out of his first two threes, I'm just letting him cook.
He played well last night, Mike.
There's never been a player.
He played the Wizards last night.
I would rather have him take a step back three. Than a catch and shoot three
to his left,
so much better at that. Shot.
Well, that's it's a bucket. So that's the plight of the bucket getter. Yeah, that is, and that's why there's always the Wade comps, and he does with his long wingspan. I get it, but he's just inefficient, and I do hope Tyler returns to this lineup so he can take more of those minutes.
I was actually just about to ask, with the results from last year, if you're a Heat fan, who would you prefer to come back here, Caleb Martin or Tyler Hero? And I know obviously. Tyler's supposed to be, our third best player? But
Caleb
Martin was great in the playoffs.
Caleb only missed
year.
Last game. He's been banged up. I think he missed this past game just in part because they finally did have some players back and active and available. But he'll be ready for the playoffs. Like, he played, I think, 36 consecutive games before yesterday. He's been banged up, though, with a lot of different
I have
ailments.
A complicated – my takes are a little all over the place, so I'm going to try to explain it. The Miami Heat played their best ball in the postseason when Tyler Hero got hurt, for whatever reason. You can rate Tyler Hero as a player. You can be high on his future, whatever.
Strus and Vincent got hot. That's exactly
but
it.
They get hot in part because Tyler Hero is not there taking their reps. So why would I argue for Tyler Hero to come back over Caleb Martin in this scenario?
I'll tell you.
I'll tell you exactly why.
You tell me.
I'll tell you.
Because, say it at the same time.
If not, I can tell you.
Because.
Ready, same time? Wait, same time, all three of us. Ready? Three,
Mike
two,
first.
One, and tell it?
Three,
two, one.
Terry Rozier.
Tyler Hero's our best point guard.
Yep, same thing.
Wow.
Well, not you, but Izzy.
Oh. Well, no, it's just because before they didn't have a backup to Tyler Hero when he would go out, and so the offense would change, and it would be this more. This weird thing of either Bam or Jimmy initiating the offense and no true point guard on the court. Whereas now if he goes out, Terry Rozier establishes himself a little bit more. And me as someone that doesn't like Terry Rozier, does not want that. Go ahead and argue why
first of all,
he's their best point guard.
Rozier's been good.
I'm so happy right now. Would it be hour one and we're talking straight Heat? Look, I think with Terry Rozier, he's just not the point guard you want at all times. He shouldn't be the guy initiating the offense all the time because he's not going to make the, let's say, obvious first pass sometimes and not let things start to flow. As the two guard, when the job is, hey, catch, make a move, finish, way better suited for that. Tyler Hero stepping in there, they can actually play together, but even when they're not playing together, Tyler is more, he's been more trained as the point guard for this team for 4 years now, so he's just better at it.
Terry's averaging 18, 4.5, 4.5 with just one turnover per game
over the
this
last
month.
Six games. Yeah, over the
no,
last six
in
games
the
in which
March.
They played the Cavs without Donovan Mitchell twice, the Portland Trail Blazers, and the Wizards.
Tough games.
Okay.
Don Lebatard.
I don't think in 2021 I can get away with my Michael Irvin radio show impression.
No, probably not.
Stugatz.
Pa, pa, pa. Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha.
That's okay. I think that's still okay. I think you can do that.
Pa, pa, pa. Ha, ha, pa, pa, ha, ha. Kev.
This is the Don Lebatar Show with the Stugatz.
Hey, Jamel. Hey, what's going on?
How's it going?
Hello. Good, good.
Hi, Jamel. Long time.
Okay, fire up friendly neighborhood race lady, because I'm coming right there.
We're going right there. Yeah.
Oh, there, yeah. There is, people don't understand. There
so
is
a, much race.
There is a race war coming tonight.
Oh, the race war is, we're hours away. Put the countdown up.
I'll explain the interaction that I had with Roy, where he didn't want to just come out and say it. All right.
I didn't have to say it.
All right.
I didn't have to say it, Jamil.
Yeah.
It's there.
Roy's siding with Kim Mulkey tonight. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate situation I put myself in.
You know what? We started. I'm sorry, Lewis. I know you don't like that, but we started. Wait, Chris, fire up the friendly neighborhood race lady.
And Lamar.
It's time for your friendly neighborhood race lady.
We're good. Jamel, there is a huge race war going down tonight in America, and it's being played out on a basketball court that may or may not have the same size three-point lines. Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Roy is going for LSU because he's a big Kim Mulkey fan. And I think
God damn it, Mike.
I think I've pinpointed what's going on here, and I think it's going to become more and more clear on social media as the game goes on. I cited an example of what Bomani told me several years ago, which is there are certain boxing matches that I'm not invited to watch with his friends because he wants to be surrounded by a certain group of friends for those title fights. And I'm feeling like tonight is that night. Can you please speak to, as our friendly neighborhood race lady, what we're going to be witnessing when Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese do battle?
It's going down, everybody. We got white America, black America, middle America, like Southern America. It's so many different types of wars that are embedded in this basketball game. And Bo is right. Like, we've seen it in not only in boxing, we've seen it in basketball. I mean, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, we all know what was at the sort of the underbelly of that. And speaking of Bomani, he brought out a recent example on his Twitter feed that was, kind of brought forth by another Twitter user, that this is UNLV Duke all over again. And I hadn't really thought about that. And I was like, yeah, to get people aware of the history, it's like, you know, obviously back in the early 90s, when UNLV just absolutely smoked Duke by 30. And then you have the rematch where Duke won. You all of a sudden, I mean, I think for a lot of black people, it felt like we had to kind of start over again as a race. Like, what just happened here?
Are the stakes that high that if Angel Reese loses to Caitlin Clark, you need to start over again as a race? And this is going to be a very funny aggregation for you.
I don't know that we have to necessarily start over, but it might have to be, it will be a black people's meeting, an important one that will be called the next day, where we might have to put some things on the agenda and get it on the table. But that's how people are so emotionally invested in this, because not only, this is what makes this one maybe a little more unique than say a Duke UNLV, or even if you want to go back in time and say, a Joe Louis, Max Schmeling type of thing, or with a lot of the boxing matches that we've seen in recent history, is that you also have the gender dynamic that's at play here. And what everybody's sort of preconceived notions about how women are supposed to behave, whether it be black women or white women. You know, a lot of the digs that get thrown at Angel Reese is about behavior and policing how she behaves, and Flaujie Johnson and Kim Mulkey about behavior. And like, no, they're not supposed to act this way. They're not supposed to be this brash. They're not supposed to be this bold. They're not supposed to get on the court and talk their shit. Like, they're not supposed to do these things, because this is not how we have idealized what women in a competitive sport, what that looks like. And I think another thing that kind of sort of inflames this even more is that we see that the criticism is often very one-sided. Caitlin Clark talks her shit. Caitlin Clark is demonstrative. Caitlin Clark, you know, and in this way, I do compare in many ways I compare it to Steph, but also in this way as well, is that Steph Curry is, and you know, Steph Curry has a lot of flair and flamboyance to his game. Like, he can get into it, you know, with people, and he's got the shimmy and all that, but people aren't bothered by that. Caitlin Clark is the same way. It's like, people aren't bothered by it because they're caught up in the narrative of, oh, here's this, you know, wonderful, kind soul from the great state of Iowa representing middle America. So they put all these sort of, what happens in these sports race wars is everybody projects their own shit on the people coming and the people who are actually involved in the competitiveness of it, who have nothing to do with any of this. Some of it is media driven. Some of it is personally driven. But at the end of the day, what's on the line tonight is an opportunity to go to the Final Four. And that's all they care about. But everybody watching cares about other shit that has nothing to do with basketball.
Well, I'm just hoping that this doesn't turn into like a Nate Robinson versus Jake Paul situation where all Black America is just going to hang their head like, how could this happen?
I know. That's why I said I said it jokingly. And just so people know, I was joking when I said we'd have to start over.
No, we might have to.
No.
Right.
Babylon B is already running with it. I'm sorry.
All right. Is that going to be the poll question? Do Black people have to start over if LSU wins tonight?
Put Jamel's name in that poll question, by the way. Do you agree with Jamel Hill when she says Black people may have to start over as a race?
Make my mentions look like a complete warpath, which would basically be called Tuesday. So it doesn't really matter.
Go ahead.
I think what Roy said, it's kind of right that there will be this sort of feeling of maybe not necessarily depression, but being let down. Because listen, let's just keep it real. If we're gonna go into the tricky waters of race, let's just dive right on in and not mess around with putting our toe in there. Is the reality is that in many ways a lot of Black folks consider basketball to be our game. And certainly when you have, and even though, especially in the women's sport, where clearly there's a lot more, you know, there's a lot of American-born white players that have played this game fantastically since it started being remotely relevant. And even before then, when it wasn't in women's basketball, you know, the reality is that the sport is about half Black. And yet it's still very much considered our game, just however you want to kind of quantify that. And so this idea that this phenomenon of Caitlin Clark, who many have already branded as the best women's basketball player ever, you know, and that has met with some pushback because, you know, the history of the sport suggests that's a very tough description to have for her, or really a lot of people, not just her, just because of the history of the game, is that to see her defeat a team like LSU that has been so good, the defending national champions, I think that there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of Black folks that might be calling in sick tomorrow.
Jamel's got a great new column at The Atlantic over Shohei Ohtani. Make sure to subscribe to her YouTube page, youtube.com/@itsjamelhill.
Yeah, Jamel, when I think of, and when I see Angel Reese, I automatically, at least a couple of years ago, thought back in the day to like Florence Griffith Joyner and to very, you know, flamboyant, dominant, and probably shit-talking athletes. We've seen it before, maybe not in this sport. It made me laugh when Angel had to basically explain to the media, hey, this is how sports work. Inside the lines, we might say things to each other, but we don't actually hate each other. Do you think that we're finally getting a clue of, hey, the women do this the way everybody else does this?
Yeah, and that's the interesting gender dynamic here, is that one of the reasons why I do like to see the demonstrativeness, not just from just her, but Caitlin Clark, and really a lot of the women's players who are at the top of the game right now, is because it's forcing the media and people, not just the media, but again, some of this is media driven. I mean, hello, that column by the LA Times, that, you know, obviously that became, you know, such a huge talker over the weekend that played on a lot of these stereotypes. But there's this idea that women need to be more polite in their competitiveness. And, you know, it reminds me kind of the same sort of things I hear about when it comes to hip hop beefs, right? Like Kendrick, Drake, J. Cole, you name it, they can go at each other all day. And everybody, you know, is like, ooh, ah, I can't wait to see where somebody goes next. But when Cardi B does it, Nicki Minaj does it, Megan Thee Stallion does it, then it's like, wait, no, the women need to stick together. They need to be better. And some of it is just about the conditioning of always thinking, even though it's not necessarily the case, it doesn't bear out, that women somehow have to be more elevated in their competitiveness and more moral in how they do it than the guys do. And it's like these women have been competing this way for a long time. Most of them had to grow up competing against boys and men. That was part of their socialization into the sport. So a lot of the behaviors they picked up from seeing men compete. And I just think it's just still shocking that in the year of our Beyonce of 2024, that people still think that women need to be more demure into how they handle themselves in these competitive environments.
Well, let's get to the Kim Mulkey of it all in this race and gender war. Jamel, you mentioned the column by the UCLA beat writer Ben Bulch. He said the quotes were in the column, "This isn't just a basketball game, it's a reckoning. Picking sides goes well beyond school allegiance. Do you prefer America's sweethearts or its dirty debutantes, milk and cookies or Louisiana hot sauce?" That gave Kim Mulkey a stand, something to stand on there. What do you think of all of it?
Yeah, and this was the reporter she should have been attacking. Okay, not Kent Babb from the Washington Post. But again, that's what I was talking about with it being media driven. It's like I'm sure you know who also should feel really insulted is UCLA. Mm-hmm. Like we got to be milk and cookies out here. Like that's what you think of us. Like we can't be something else that's a little spicier because that's an incredible team. And you know a lot of this. Giving Kim Mulkey a fight, as you know, giving her something to stand on is interesting because there are a lot of people who probably saw her, you know, come after this column and a lot of, you know, the athletes did as well, which I think was warranted for sure. But then you find yourself having to agree with Kim Mulkey and then there's a part of your soul that dies a little bit. But that's beside the point. But she was absolutely right. And, you know, I think as we see this latest explosion in women's basketball, because I think it's just on track to get even higher than it's already been, the media needs to also sort of come up a little higher too, and to in terms of how women's sports are covered and how this particular sport is covered. Because listen, I don't want to be too hard on the writer in this sense, is that, listen, as writers, we've all written columns that we would love to take back. But it's just in today's age, that's just a lot more unforgiving because it's too much information. We should be better than that. I mean, we have been sort of in this fight, if you will, when you think about just how Black athletes versus white athletes used to be more prevalently characterized, period, where you had the white guy who was always his intellect and skill, or his intellect with the game was always very noteworthy, and they made it seem like a lot of Black athletes just hit the genetic lottery and that's why they were able to ascend to the heights that they are. I thought we moved past that part of it. And this is just sort of an offshoot of that time where we really trafficked in these stereotypes that frankly did a disservice to the athletes who were actually competing.
I'm running short on time here. So two quick questions. Please try to keep your answers under a minute here. What do you make of where we've gone with college basketball and that Gino Auriemma's UConn are following this game and they are a footnote, if that. No one is talking about Gino's UConn here because the sport has evolved to two marquee names, Zoo and Battle. There are plenty of good players. You mentioned a bunch of them that are also playing on this, but this is because of that one moment, the You Can't See Me, Tony Yayo moment. This is about Angel versus Caitlin Clark. What do you make of the sea change in the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's beautiful because I remember having to see 50 billion headlines that said, is UConn's dominance bad for women's basketball? And about how they were dragging down the sport because they were just so good. UConn hasn't won a national championship, I think, in 10 years. And that, to me, shows that this sport has grown appropriately. And I always said when they were dominating, listen, If you believe in women's basketball, believe in this athlete, you will invest and you will stop getting embarrassed. And that's exactly what happened. So sometimes you need a UConn to bring everybody else up. When I started covering women's basketball in 1997, it was unfathomable to think that Tennessee mm-hmm. wouldn't dominate forever. And now you look at the different names in the field, the fact that you have NC State that is going to its first Final Four since 1998, a Final Four I covered. It was my first women's Final Four. When you see that Oregon State, I mean, obviously they were up against a juggernaut in South Carolina, but the fact that that team and that program is in the mix now, it's many more names that are in it. USC has the number one recruiting class coming in next year. This year they have Juju Watkins, who was the number one high school player. So just imagine where they'll be in another year or two. Again, this sport is trending. It's been trending up for a while, but now I think you're going to get that sort of big lightning bolt experience. And part of the way you do it is that you have to build rivalries. You have to, in a way, build nonsense. Maybe you mix in a race war here or there, and then you're kind of off to the races.
Thank you for keeping that answer short. What's the best result for tonight?
The best result, I think, is if – oh, man, this is tough, because I know a lot of people want to see Caitlin Clark really have another shot at winning the championship. But I'm not going to lie, man. I kind of want to see LSU South Carolina. Not going to lie. All right, so
that's
I want to say
answer.
It's LSU, because you kind of still need a villain, so to speak. And I don't consider them to be villainous, but they seem to be very comfortable wearing the quote unquote black hat. And I think having that presence at the Final Four, it again, you have just as many people who root for them and just as many people who want to see them lose. So I'm going to say it's LSU. And to be honest, I think LSU is the better team. And plus, I ain't picking against my people, you know. I got things on the line myself.
See, that easy, Roy.
I can't.
Race, lady.
Thank you so much, Jamel. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube page. It's at It's Jamel Hill. YouTube.com/@It's Jamel Hill. Thank you, Jamel.
Stu Gatz here for my friends over at Simply Safe. When you travel, do concerns back home nag you? Did you lock up? Did you leave a window open? That's why I recommend investing in Simply Safe Home Security today for award-winning security and peace of mind wherever your summer plans take you. I've had Simply Safe in my home for many years now. The peace of mind it gives me, especially during the summertime when I'm all over the place, is incredible. Because I know the things I care about, the things I value back home, I can always keep an eye on it using Simply Safe's indoor and outdoor cameras. So do me a favor. Before you head out on your next vacation, make sure to protect your whole home with Simply Safe's variety of indoor and outdoor cameras, plus add sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, no contracts to worry about, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Simply Safe has given me and many of my listeners real peace of mind. I want you to have it too. So right now, get 20% off any new Simply Safe system with Fast Protect monitoring at simplysafe.com/DLB. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.